Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to today's show. You're listening to Warren Radio. This is our Hot Prophecy News. Actually, it's going to be our special segments. And today we are doing a special segment. This is a special two-hour broadcast. We do these once in a while. And this particular broadcast is going to be on UFO, alien abduction phenomenon. We're going to be discussing it with Byron LeBeau, and Richard Stout was also supposed to be with us. I haven't heard from him, but we are in the middle of this. Byron, after having met both Greg Messina and Richard Stout and working closely with Richard, who is an abductee, he had given his testimony that he was under the thumb of Satan and subsequently released by the power of prayer to the Father and the Son after Richard's prayers. It actually led him to reconsider his stance on UFOs and what you would call ufology, and things assumed to be true in his first book and led to the publication, and this is the book and what we're talking about, The Cursed Net. And thus, when we get into the real Star Wars, this is an interesting topic. A lot of things are going on, and so I encourage you, we are going to be taking any calls or emails or anything like that. If you have questions on those, we will be taking those as well. Other than that, we're going to be proceeding with this. We have talked to a number of guests about this subject, and I have written extensively on this particular subject, and so I encourage you to stay tuned. This will be a fascinating discussion. I'm speaking right now with Byron. Byron, are you there?
Yes. Hi, Dana. How are you?
I'm doing good. And why don't you give us a little bit of a background, a little bit more in what we've been just talking about, and where this all began for you.
Okay, yes. It's always good to begin at the beginning. And I go back quite a ways, in the mid-60s, as a matter of fact, when my father had given me my first initiation into the field of ufology with a book called This Baffling World. And I'll remember this book very vividly because it had in it some very interesting subjects, including a personality author, Goffrey. And he had seen a UFO, and it was the way it happened that attracted my attention, because it came up to his left wing, and then it went to his right wing, and then it shot away. And he was in a Cessna as a pilot out in California someplace. And I had only known him as a personality on the television. So when I had seen this particular picture and read the stories, and there were other stories, too, about the paranormal, I was really interested. I said, this is not only a baffling subject, it's something that I needed to pursue and try to get to the bottom of.
What year was that, Byron?
Okay, that would have been approximately 1966.
Okay, 1966. And, you know, those have increased since then. Now, on this, you know, it's interesting to note that some of the most some of the better sightings as we've seen have actually been from pilots such as that, haven't they?
That is absolutely correct. As a matter of fact, in approximately the year 2000-2001, I had met Graham Bethoon, who lived right here in New Jersey from where I'm calling from, and he was a naval pilot commander who had witnessed an extremely interesting UFO back in 1951 that was so bizarre. It was a 300-foot craft that came up to his DC-3, and he told me all about it. As a matter of fact, there's a full report on this particular incident in Michael Hesseman's book, UFOs, The Secret History. And there's an actual picture of Graham Bethoon when he was a young man. And unfortunately, Graham has just passed away within the last 2 years. But we were actually on TV together talking about UFOs and the paranormal. And I was very comfortable being a co-guest with Graham on a local New Jersey public access program, because I felt for the very thing you just said, that pilots probably better than anybody in the on the land or in the air would be able to recognize something that is of the earth, whether it's natural or artificial, because they've been trained to do so, and they have to react within a second or so to anything untoward up in the sky. So after having a number of conversations with Graham, and after having read thoroughly his full manuscript about the story that Michael Hesseman presented, I was convinced that he had a true encounter. As a matter of fact, it was so intense that when he had gotten back to his home port after having witnessed the UFO, he actually was confronted by the intelligence division, who grilled him very copiously regarding his encounter. And Graham was very puzzled, and of course he was told not to say anything. This was 1951, but he also was indicated to that the military had the intelligence of that would be the CIC in those days. They had good knowledge of the things that he was seeing, so it wasn't like this was a surprise to them. So, and he actually saw a copy of something that confirmed that what he was seeing was nothing that was an illusion in the sky. So,
you know, the thing that we want to concentrate on, and you know, let me talk a little bit. Now, the CurseNet goes into detail about when you get into St. Jude, who quotes Enoch, and mm-hmm. you get into this, and we get into the nitty-gritty of the Greek and stuff like that, and it's extensive.
Yes.
And we will talk about that in a while, but the thing that we need to do, too, is when we first start out is state the fact that these things exist, that, you know, that there's a number of things happening here that people don't quite agree with. And when you finish introducing that, I'll go into one of the first things and I'll ask your opinion on this and see
sure.
what you think. But go ahead, Byron.
Okay. Well, and what you say is well taken, Dana, because I had spent, and I mentioned this on another radio program recently, it took me 40 years of intensive reading, analyzation, being involved not only with a UFO organization, but more importantly, I was involved with a world-famous military scientist by the name of Coleman von Kavitsky, who also is now deceased. But I learned a tremendous amount about the nuts and bolts of the UFO phenomena, starting somewhere between 1969 and 1970, when I was in the process of becoming an English teacher, and it fit in hand in glove with this particular gentleman because he was a Hungarian military person who had come over to the United States and was actually working with the United Nations in 1966. And the then Secretary General Uthant had asked Coleman if he could do a proposal regarding the UFO phenomena and present it to the General Assembly. So, coincidentally, I had seen a picture of him in the paper in the late 60s and a story. And also, there was a number that he had, and I noticed that he lived quite close to myself. So I called him and I said, maybe I can learn some more about this subject through Coleman. And I wrote him a letter indicating that I would offer my services. And it just so happened, as coincidence would have it, that he needed somebody to help him because he was a little bit shy in the English construction because he was a foreign person. And he, even though he knew four languages, he needed somebody to help him write letters to senators, congressmen, and eventually presidents of the United States, which I wound up doing because he had called me to come to help him, and I said, of course I would. And between around 1970 through the late 1980s, I helped Coleman on and off in any of the various projects that he had and any of the letters that he needed to have drafted. So it was a marriage made in heaven in one sense, because he not only had me help him, but he also gave me very interesting information to get and to show me that this was a real phenomenon. And because he was coming at it from a military point of view, I didn't get the sense at that point that I do now that it really wasn't an ET phenomenon. Although he treated it as such, because he, after all, he came out of the military in World War II, and he had a military mindset. As a matter of fact, he referred to the so-called ETs as galactic forces. So everything was looked upon from a military point of view. And I went along with that for a while until I started to get the sense, you know, having a Christian background myself, that there was something that wasn't quite adding up to me as far as this phenomenon was concerned. But it took me between 300 and 500 books, a number of conversations, a number of intense meetings with what we would frame as abductees and other people who had seen things. And these were real people. These weren't flakes, phonies, people who were, you know, needed to get a life. These were just simply real people who have seen something strange and unusual and didn't know where to go. I used to give lectures, you know, being a teacher myself, and having all of this extensive knowledge. By the 1990s, I was starting to give lectures on the subject just to share with people what I knew, because it is an ongoing understanding, and I was hoping that I was going to be able to connect all of the dots sooner or later. In the 1990s, and I'll make this very short because I know we have a lot to talk about, but in the 1990s, I had some very interesting things that happened to me that had to do with the paranormal and synchronistic events that at first I just, being an open-minded person, and because you have to be in order to be a good researcher, you can't dismiss things automatically. And I'll say that to anybody out there listening to what I'm saying, do not dismiss anything regardless of what it sounds like until you have an opportunity to get to the root of what is being said. Because you don't, you can throw the baby out with the bathwater very easily, especially when it comes to this subject. And I am proof of it, because I stayed with this even through the paranormal and the synchronistic events, and I even had seen a UFO, you know, as time went on. But it wasn't until 2005 when I met Greg Messina through a series of very interesting, we would call them synchronicities, where he was doing a documentary on ufology, and because I happen to know the type of information he needed for his UFO documentary, because it had to do with something on Long Island, and back in those days, I was the point man for a local UFO organization and actually talked on TV, et cetera, to the media about the very things that he was investigating, because he was a young boy then, and he was impressionable, and he needed to get to the bottom of the very things that hopefully I had some answers to when he was doing this documentary. But to make a long story short, after Greg and I had talked, Greg met Richard Stout. And it turned out that Richard Stout and I had belonged to the same local UFO organization. However, we belonged at different times, and I had never gotten to meet Richard Stout. So Greg was the one who actually brokered our get together, so to speak, over the phone. And from, I would say, late 2005 through 2006, I have been working steadily with Richard Stout ever since, because he was able to somehow define the real parameters of the UFO phenomena as being demonic and of the fallen angels, as opposed to the ETs. And the irony of ironies, Dana, and I'll just make this real short, was that it was Richard Stout, who wasn't a reader particularly of UFOs. He was an investigator, and he'd seen a lot of things, and he can tell you about his own experiences when he comes on the program. But he had asked me which book of all the UFO books I've ever read would be the one that he would probably get the most out of. and knowing just a little bit about Richard and where he was coming from, and I didn't know why exactly I said this, but because I had read over close to 500 books on the subject, I said, read the book of Enoch. That's all I said. So he took me at his word, and unbeknownst to me, he had gone on the internet to look for a version of the book of Enoch that he could feel comfortable with, and it turned out that the very translation that he felt comfortable with was the very one that I had read. That is, the one who first translated the book of Enoch, a Hebrew scholar by the name of Richard Lawrence, back in the 19th century, who was working out of Oxford University, I believe. So this was, and then this is where the turning point comes in. I had mentioned on another radio show, I was in ufology, going through it for close to 40 years now. This was like by 2005, and I still hadn't felt that I had connected the final dots in all of this information, even though I thought it was close. But it was something that Richard Stout found in the book of Enoch, which was in chapter 68, verse 17 and 18, where he was so excited, he called me up on the phone one night and actually told me, and we have this in the book, but just to give you the dramatization, because, you know, you can intellectualize all you want, but when something has what I would frame as an emotional, visceral reaction, that's what this was. He told me he found something in the verses that I had missed, even though I had told him what book to read, that Enoch understood the abduction phenomena, and it was demonic and of the fallen angels. And he read this verse to me, and as soon as I looked at the verse, I said, how did I miss that? Because it had to do with very specific things relating to the abduction phenomena and the taking of the fetus and the bite of the serpent and a miscarriage to the woman who would be in her first trimester. Now, this is something written by a man over 2,000 years ago and later, because the writings of Enoch initially go back to approximately 3,000 B.C., but we had only had copies, and the early evangelist, and you referred to Jude before, was aware of one of these copies because he actually quoted a verse from the book of Enoch in the Epistle of Jude. So I was extremely excited about this, and from that, Richard started to send me some notes, raw notes, and because of my background, I was able to transcribe the notes into readable English and put them up on a website, and it was Greg Messina who, about a year after that, said, you know what, maybe we should put this format in book form so that people who cannot or do not wish to read things on the internet can see it for themselves and maybe gain some appreciation. By the way, the book is dedicated to the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, and to the Christian audience out there, I can only say it's in honor of the first commandment. I am the Lord thy God, thou shalt not have strange gods before me. And what our book is an unmasking of these false gods from way back when to the Babylonian mystery schools to the present day in the New Age.
Well, you
know, that's the long and short of it, Dana.
Well, there's quite a bit there, and you know, for people interested, they'll need to get the book. You know, in a national poll, the Coalition for Freedom of Information had a poll, and they, out of this poll, they found that 14% have had or know someone who has had at least one encounter of the first, second, or third kind. Mm-hmm. And the largest proportion, 12%, say they or someone else they know have seen a UFO in close quarters.
Right.
Now, that's just one particular stat. But when we look at the whole thing, when we see what exactly is going on, there is no denying that people are seeing something.
Yes.
And, of course, if you're a pilot, for instance, and you look out to the left and you see something about 300 feet long, I mean, you're going to wonder, you know, if you're out of the way so you don't get run over. I mean, you know, you cannot deny what a lot of these pilots are
well,
seeing.
Well, let me just make a footnote to that. most people, most intelligent people, would not deny that. But Graham told me a very interesting and funny story. He said when he saw the UFO, he told his co-pilot to take over the DC-3. He goes back, and one of the people who he was transporting from England to where he was finally going to be his final destination, turned out to be a psychiatrist. And he told the psychiatrist that there was something very unusual up in the front. If you want to come up to the cockpit to see the UFO, he's more than welcome to do so. And the psychiatrist looks at Graham and he says, there's no need for that. I've already determined that they do not exist, so I don't need to go up. Now, Graham's telling me this story, and I'm saying to myself, yep, it sounds like some psychiatrists that we may know who are in apparent denial about anything that doesn't fit the parameters of the subject matter that they're dealing with. And that, I believe, is part of the problem with psychology in general. They already have predetermined notions what reality is, and if you don't fit into their parameters, there's something wrong with you. And that's where I part company with. And I don't want to label all psychiatrists and psychologists as this. After all, there have been some very good people who have cracked certain pieces of data in the UFO field, you know, like John Mack, and I know a Dr. Gene Mundy. These were very, very good people. But psychology alone is not going to get to the bottom of what we tried to address in our book, because we used the ultimate source, which is the Bible, the Old Testament and the New Testament. And for those people who are canonically inclined, all I can say is the following, that don't rule out something just because it's not canonical. Because I have found in an extensive research on the Book of Enoch that this particular book is doing a service to confirm what's in the Old Testament and the New Testament. It doesn't just talk about the what, but it clarifies the how, the why, the where, and the when. And when I read that and I matched it up with my 40 years of research in ufology, I could confirm that what Enoch was saying was true. And I can also go on record as saying I believe he was an inspired first prophet of God who spoke to the coming of Jesus, the Son of Man, the elect one. This is all in the Book of Enoch. You know, so
we're gonna take a short break here, Brian, and we'll be right back. And so everybody just take a moment while we do this.
You are listening to WARN Radio, Into the Night. We broadcast a couple of times a week. You are listening to this broadcast, and it is broadcast to you from the WIBR WARN Radio and Online Ministries. This is the Watchman Institute for Biblical Research, the Watchman Alert Radio Network. You can get a hold of us at P.O. Box 280, Mills, Wyoming 82644. Don't forget to check out our websites, wingswatchman.org, bday4, that's F-O-R, America.com, warn-usa.com. Remember, in everything that we do, we offer a lot of things. Almost everything on the sites are free. And you can get free audios, archives, downloads. You can read the articles for free and many other things. So check out the WIBR WARN Radio websites today. Contact me, Watchman, at wingswatchman.org, or visit our websites, Wings Watchman, that's W-I-N-G-S, Watchman, M-A-N.org, wingswatchman.org. From there, you can gain access to all the websites. Welcome. We want to thank you for listening. You know, here at the WIBR and WARN Radio news sites, we feature hot prophecy news, articles, offers, and more. And every Sunday, we send out emails. Now, these emails are very particular, because within these, you can get a lot of resources. Now, it contains hot prophecy news. We also include headlines, headlines from our WIBR Warn Radio, and we also feature certain articles and commentaries, some by us, some by others. We also have special offers from our sponsors, information on the orphans and pastors in India. We also send out press releases, information on events, and other announcements not currently covered. For the most part, we send out a couple of emails a week, plus we send out holiday greetings as well. You know, here we try to do a little bit more to help others and to warn. So I encourage you today, get in on the free hot prophecy updates that we offer. Just go to wingswatchman.org or dday4america.com or warn-usa.com and find the Get Free Hot Prophecy Updates ad and click on it and go to them. This is Save Subscribe. That means we don't give it out, your name or information, to anybody, and you can unsubscribe at any time. So get your free Hot Prophecy Updates today.
Okay, we're back and we are talking with Brian LeBeau, and we are talking about UFO and alien phenomenon. Their book, The Cursed Net, is out, and we are, you know, one thing I wanted to quote here, Brian, and I don't know if you've heard this, the World UFO Disclosure Campaign, and they are actually calling on the UN General Assembly to hold open and secrecy-free hearings on the UFO extraterrestrial presence on and around Earth. Mm-hmm. They also want to hold these hearings on advanced energy and propulsion systems related to that subject, that when this particular information technology is publicly released, it will provide solutions to the global environment and other challenges. And basically what they believe is that they will enter into a new history and worldkind and global, I should say, intergalactic communication wisdom that will unify humans with all the rest of the galaxies. And so this is something that we need to understand here. I think that if you haven't been to our site, you need to read a couple of articles. We have a lot of I have Materializing of Evil, which speaks of this, the Materializing of Evil, the Arrival of the Light Bearer. And it's also the most recent one that is Silver Threads and Alien Eyes, the UFO Phenomenon and Its Purpose. Mm-hmm. So between all of this stuff, now I'm going to put also over on our archive, I'm going to try to get together all of our audio interviews, which, you know, is pretty extensive, and put them, including this one. Now, these broadcasts will be also broadcast on our Warn Radio Into the Night on Friday nights by satellite, and this will go out on Friday nights 9 p.m. So you can hear that night as well. This is aired over the American Voice Radio satellite network. So, Brian, have you heard of that World UFO Disclosure?
Yes, I have, and part of it is a little disturbing to me, because I think the bottom line in all of this is that it's going to be ETs, as in our space brothers, who are going to somehow finally help us after all of our years of messing up the planet. And frankly, I believe we're being set up. I really do.
Well, we are. And in my Materializing of Evil, I quote Isaiah 66:4 and 2 Thessalonians 2:3, which talks about the Lord choosing the delusion and bringing their own fears upon them. And
right.
So there's no doubt when we talk about this particular subject that there are, and when you investigate it too, when you research it, and you research the theology of the visitors that all these people see.
Right,
because there are actual visitors that people. There's one group up in Washington State right now that have been doing this for years, and they have a whole theology. There's others who have theology of the so-called star visitors, and the theology, of course, is well known once you research it, and every bit of it is anti-God. It takes away from the Savior. It's a total removal from the Judeo-Christian thought on salvation and redemption and the whole thing.
Well, hold that thought right there, Dana, because this is one area. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, this is one area that I have paid particular attention to, especially recently. There's three different people out there who are seems to be massaging from high places. And what better place to massage from than from high places? Because the ordinary person out on the street trying to make a living, maybe working two or three jobs and doesn't have time to watch anything but the news and The Simpsons late at night, would probably buy into, well, listen, this is a Monsignor talking from the Vatican.
Yeah.
Or this is a person from the NSC, the National Security Council, or Stephen Greer, who's dying to bring forth all of this so that we can get along with our ET buddies out there who are nice people, you see. The fact of the matter is that I'm very disturbed that a person such as Monsignor Corrado Balducci,
yeah,
who actually belonged to the Vatican Curia, you know, this is the governing body of the Vatican, and if he speaks, it's with the consent of the Pope, at least tacitly. So when he says something like, and I have a quote from Balducci, and this is what he says, Balducci is a demonology expert and a consultant to the Vatican, and since the Catholic Church has historically demonized many new phenomena that were poorly understood, his stating that the Church does not censure these encounters is all the more remarkable. And then, in the same report, I saw something with Dr. Michael Wolff, who was a member of the NSC, and he's suggesting that when extraterrestrial contact becomes authoritatively announced by world governments over the next several years. Now, this is something that came out this year. So that are we being set up that sometime before the grand date of 2012, we are going to be meeting our quote-unquote star visitor masters? And what really got me, Balducci made this quote, and it came from something when some of the Mexican ufologists were over in Rome, and a person by the name of Jaime Musan, who is the chief ufologist that comes out of Mexico. And this is what Balducci said. I always wish to be the spokesman for these star peoples who also are part of God's glory, and I will continue to bring it to the attention of the Holy Mother Church. I think this is where part of the problem comes in, that if we just assume... And when you assume something, of course, you're making the biggest possible mistake you can possibly make, that you don't know the root of things, and that's why you're assuming it. But the fact of the matter is, my study of ufology showed it's anything but benign, and there's no such things as ETs per se, but there are such things as demons and fallen angels who are very, very, very good at masquerading as ETs. The more they get people to see who they are not, the more they can work their devilish deeds under the scenes. And that's one of the themes of our book, by the way.
Yep, and that's where I've been writing on materializing of evil, and even this latest article. Now, you know, I might put in here, I interviewed Michael Heiser, who's a PhD in Hebrew,
mm-hmm.
and we got on this subject of this aliens, and even mm-hmm. out of Genesis 6, and whether or not aliens can be, you know, exactly what they are. And as far as the Hebrew goes, from the standpoint of the word, that we find the sons of God in any number of Nephilim, you know, where we may get these foreigners, which is interpreted by various parts as to being, you know, an appearance where they are here. Now, as far as being carbon-based, you know, like we are, humans you know, the Hebrew doesn't show it in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
So when we look at this, you know, it's not impossible at all, by any stretch of the imagination, for the prince of the power of the air to have the deception in the air and also here, and for these things to do exactly what, you know, to deceive those who refuse the love of the truth, as in 2 Thessalonians. Let me tell you a story, and I want to see what you have to say. Do you know Barry Chamish?
Yes.
Okay, Barry does a lot of research. He's, of course, he's a secular Jew. And he's been interviewed by a number, you know, quite a few Christian organizations because he writes on Israel. And he has a book that he did on UFOs. It was a large UFO sighting, I think it was back in the 80s, and there was quite a few of these things. And he interviewed the people firsthand who had seen these things appear. And this is what they described to him. A silvery metallic craft came down. The beings came out, and they were all dressed in a silvery type material with a helmet on. You couldn't see the face. And they didn't walk on the ground, but they were actually off the ground by about a foot or so. They didn't move except by just going through the air. And these beings, when approached by some of them, had turned around, and this particular witness had asked him, he said, take off that helmet so I can see your face. And no lips moved, but he heard in his head the words, I cannot do this, and the conversation went on. Well, over a period of time, he continued to investigate these things, and the people spoke of these things coming into the household, going through walls, going through doors, etc. Now, when I was questioning Barry about this, you know, and I spoke to him about the materializing of evil, about demonic entities, he actually referred to them as gods. And, of course, now he's not, you know, a Christian. He doesn't look at it from our standpoint. So if we have a main researcher here who writes and he knows how to research and he looks at the evidence and he says these are good beings, these are gods, then where does that leave people today who may be ignoring our own warnings?
Well, I think that's an excellent question, Dana, and from my view of all of the different personages that have tried to tackle the subject on a nuts and bolts basis, they begrudgingly have to come to the conclusion at least that it's a multiple dimensional phenomena. It's not nuts and bolts. Therefore, it's not ETs per se. But because they either have a problem with the Bible, which clearly states what the situation is all about, and Enoch, they take the other route of either multiple dimensional or ultra-dimensional beings that somehow can transverse time and space. And this is where John Mack was going in his research. Before he was accidentally killed. I think it was an accident. I'm not sure about that. But, see, it's not that so much that John Mack was becoming a Christian, by the way. It was that if something, if the powers that be, in other words, when I say the powers that be, this, and I've defined this in the book as the minions that work for the dark side, we would call them the elite New World Order, who are given things for becoming the slaves of Satan, you see. Regardless of how you look upon that, this is what seems to be what is happening for anybody who does research in the New World Order today and looks at the elite families and who they bow down to. You know, in the deep, dark, secret meetings that they have that they don't ever want to talk about. You know, it was curious to me that George Bush and John Kerry, both presidential hopefuls back in 2004, both came out of the Skull and Bones occult group. And when you read and do research on the Skull and Bones, you know that is a grooming school for those that will be placed in very, very sensitive positions in order to move along the one-world government in keeping with the plan of world domination by the satanic forces. but it's always under the cover of their minions that they do this. And for anyone to think otherwise, I believe, would be being naive. That's why people like Stephen Greer, who, you know, I have all the, you know, the greatest respect for him in one sense. He's a doctor who's trying to feel he's helping mankind by getting all of these people together in his disclosure project and really coming forth with things that we really are hiding from the public. In other words, the government really does have certain things that they don't share. And the reason they don't share things like breakthroughs with anything that has to do with anti-gravity and things along those lines is a very simple reason. The elite are making too much money on oil and gas. They don't want to have their golden goose broke. So they keep it to themselves. So all of the things they do in secret are only for the benefit of the elite, and it's not for the benefit of the masses. So they had their cake and eat it too.
Well, you know, when we talk about a lot of this, and from my standpoint, you know, and when I researched a lot of this, and over the years, you know, when you look at this stuff, and I've had a number of experiences myself. Now, I'm not going to go into that, but the thing of it is that here we've got visitors, say star visitors. Okay, now we have one group that calls them gods. Now, I have major problems with that, even if I wasn't a believer. My background would say, okay, these are gods. You say they're gods. Now, let's look. Now, if they're gods and they traveled here even through another dimension or they traveled millions of miles, here they get down here and they're traveling through Area 51 out in the middle of a pasture and they crash. Now, that comes under my give me a break department. You know, that right there was either a setup. You know, there's no way that these things, whatever they are going to travel millions of miles from the Pleiades and get here and crash on planet Earth. That doesn't even make sense.
No.
Now, if they were gods, why do they need vehicles? That's the other thing. So I would have major problems, like if I was just researching it from a journalistic standpoint, things that absolutely, positively do not fit any way, shape, or form, even if you were a higher conscience or a higher power. Now, make no mistake about it, these people who are claiming these to be star visitors are also those same ones that claim that Jesus Christ and Mahatma Gandhi and a lot of these others had the Messiah or the Christ Spirit inserted in them. And this Christ Spirit, of course, they say, becomes the star visitor. It's an alien presence, so to speak, and so when they're going to come again. So all this is a bunch of nonsense, and this is where we're talking and we get into this. Now, we've got some real exciting things to talk about here. There's so much here to cover, Brian, just so much. Now, before we go on, I'm going to let you... Is there something you want to cover before we move on?
Yeah, just make a point on what you said, Dana. I know there's a lot to cover, but, you know, point by point, everything you say is absolutely true. It doesn't make any sense. We do address it in the book, and we say, well, let's put two and two together. If they didn't need UFOs to get here because they are so advanced, why, in fact, do they? And the only conclusion we could come to, well, if they are fallen angels and demons and don't want to be recognized as such, they can pretend to be such by using UFOs as a facade. So
that's
what
exactly
Heiser,
right.
Michael Heiser used, by the way, we do quote, I read his book, it's a very good book, I even recommend, even though he writes it under the guise of fiction, the facade, it does bring up the point that the fallen angels and demons controlled their minions, who happen to be the elite forces, who are the ones who think they are in charge of everything, you see? And because phenomena of compartmentalization, they play both sides against the middle.
And when we talk about Michael Heiser, you know, this guy's not a dummy. This guy, he takes the original Hebrew and he puts it together, you know, very logical, very systematic. You know, so there's no doubt about it that, you know, I did an interview with L.A. Marzulli, you know, Terry James, you know, a bunch of them.
I like L.A., right, Lynn Marzulli, he's great. I actually listen, yeah.
We have three. I think we have three last year. I did with Lynn last year.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about this, you know, and
right.
we were discussing the thing. Pardon?
Did Lynn Marzulli discuss with you his the incident he had with the Mothman?
No, no.
Oh, I have to tell you that story.
Yeah, yeah, do that. But, you know, we were talking about this whole scenario, about one day all of America asleep and waking up, and all of a sudden the skies are full of UFOs. Now, there's a whole scenario that a number of people believe, and they believe that it's going to come, you know, through the series of events that we see in the Earth, you know, regular prophetic events that we are looking at already. So there's no doubt that number one, you can't deny. Now, you can. Now, I cite a number of, in this latest article, a number of things that's happening, even last year from the UFO sighting thing. But, you know, you cannot deny what's going on. And the second thing of it is, if it is going on, you have to make a decision as to what it really is, because that decision can affect your entire life.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I know, that with the alien phenomenon, and this comes with every alien abduction, every alien, anything that has to do with them, more common than anything is the fear factor. Most people are overcome, in my research, by a fear that is almost a dread that overcomes them like a dark blackness of what may happen to them while they sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that that's not of God.
Yes.
So, at any rate, there's a lot of other interesting things, but I want to ask you about that thing with L.A. Marzulli.
Oh, yes, because it's part of what we feel is so important as part of spiritual warfare. Because of these things, and it gets into my theme, my personal theme. Richard, when he discusses this with you, he will talk from his own point of view of how he came to Jesus Christ. Through praying through the Father. And he has a number of stories, many of them are not even in the book, where he got a profound feeling that all of this stuff that was being done to him could be done away with, but not through his own power. It had to come through the power of prayer. And reliance on the Father and the Son, I have come to believe, is of the utmost importance in our fight against spiritual forces. We cannot do it by ourselves. And as much as you say that, when you live through certain experiences like I have, which I'll address in hour two, you will come to really appreciate what that means. I think the average person who maybe doesn't know the first thing about the alien abduction phenomenon, how real it is, what it can do, may not have that kind of appreciation. And they pray, it's like lip prayer, and it's not through the whole heart, mind, soul, and spirit, which, again, is another one of our themes. But getting back to Lynn Marzulli, he told Daniel Ott a very interesting program, and I just happened, to be listening to the program on The Edge. It was from last year, I believe, and it went something like this. He was investigating, as a researcher, the whole phenomena of Mothman and how evil it is and all of that other stuff, okay? So, and he was in his bed one night, and he felt something on the bottom of his bed, looks, and he sees it's this creature right there at the bottom of his bed. And he was taken aback. It took him about 30 seconds, he said, to collect himself. But when he did collect himself, all he could think of was focusing the psalm, one of the psalms, right to the middle of the Mothman. And when he did that, this seemingly invincible creature felt like it was hit, like a bullet, and it shrieked away, and it was gone. So Marzulli told Daniel Ott, you see, this is what spiritual warfare is all about, and it works. You've got to have faith 100% that the power within you is greater than the power that's in this world. which is happens to be a quote, as you, I'm sure, well aware, comes from the first epistle of John, chapter 4. He actually says this. I mean, we quote it in the book, but do you really believe that? If you were faced with a negative force that looked ominous and it was in the middle of the night and you had nobody else around to protect you, what would be the first thing that you would think about? And this was the first, see, I believe he was a pastor too. This was the first thing that he thought about, and it worked, you know. And I have read a number of situations. Here again, Richard Stout, he prayed, and he had a tremendous number of things that were happening to him, and all of a sudden they were all gone. And that led him on his search through the Bible to become a Bible student. It took him 11 years. And by the time the situation became ripe, which was in the end of 2005, after discussing things with Greg Messina, it led to everything that you see now as the fruit that's contained within the cursed net. It's all intertwined.
Well, you know, there's no doubt that for those, you know, a majority of people have never faced stuff like this. And, you know, most of these beings, I believe, with anything, you know, you have to open up the door for a lot of these beings to just come in. And I believe that there's something in the past, there's something that you've done, something that may have caused them to be attracted or be able to come at you.
Mm-hmm.
And when we look at what a number of people who have been delivered from situations just as you described, you know, it comes forth where people stand up and they declare the name of Jesus Christ and command them to leave. And, you know, there's no doubt about it. I've read that on numerous occasions about these particular entities. And, you know, there's no doubt that these things will bring a terror and a dread. And even if they do not appear, the mere thought of these things can bring terror and a fear and a paranoia. And there's a lot of people today that are living with that fear and paranoia, and that have not found total peace. And it's not until you find someone that have actually, been able to, through the power of God, through Jesus Christ our Lord, been able to achieve that deliverance from these entities.
Well, again, this is a great segue into what I bore testimony to in chapter 17. I just mentioned this in the book. But I felt I was transcribing the raw notes of Richard Stout and trying to put them into good English so that this is what eventually became the book. But it dawned on me by the time we got to almost the end of the book that, hey, you know what? I have my own testimony, you know? I had gone through almost 30 years of what I would really call a desert because I wasn't getting any answers. In the early 90s, I actually thought I had stumbled upon something good, and I put that in quotation marks, between the works of Zachariah Sitchin and the Gnostic writings, which would be the secret writings. So now I have very negative feelings about both. But at that point in time, I actually thought that maybe this is, if we combine the two together, it would be a great answer. And then sometime early around 2001, I start to see Michael Heiser coming out with some very severe problems with Zachariah Sitchin. And I checked up on that, and I found that because he was a Mesopotamian scholar and knew what Sitchin was trying to do, he felt that perhaps it may have been an agenda and he was using words incorrectly. To make a long story short, it became very clear to me, because I had written about him in my first book, meaning Sitchin, that, hey, this could be an agenda, too, to steer us away from the truth of the Bible. It seems to be a very strong thesis with anybody of the New Age is, well, no matter what we do, we want to get them away from the Bible. It doesn't matter which tact we use, whether we're using aliens from other planets who are going to come here and save us, and they've been our progenitors and the whole bit. This is where Sitchin is coming from, and trying to rewrite the Bible using skewed language, as Heiser found out. And then you have the other part of it, you know, with the Gnostic, the so-called secret knowledge that I used to be, you know, non-committal about. I just wrote about it. I just thought, well, the Nag Hammadi's out there. Let me see what it's all about. It's talking about archons. I thought it was aligning to the same thing that St. Paul was talking about. And I came to the conclusion, and it wasn't until roughly 2005, which I started to write vehemently about in 2006, that this is another little trick. You know, you talk about the baits and the lures of Satan. Well, guess what, folks? In chapter 3, Genesis, it's talking about the lure and the bait of secret knowledge. You know, don't pay attention to what God says. You do this and you will be like the Most High, the very thing that Satan tried to do, and what was the cause of his fall. So you have to say the same motif hasn't really changed that much from then till now. So it really makes you think, you know. So getting to my own situation, you know, these guys are so clever. And when I say these guys, I'm talking about the fallen angels and their demonic hordes. Now, and I'll spend a few minutes talking about the origins of that, because I found that fascinating in relationship to Enoch and how it all fits in with the Old Testament and the New Testament, right?
Yeah.
But this is personal to me. It's not an intellectual exercise. By 1995, I had 3 years of paranormal experiences, okay? And these related to all sorts of things that don't normally happen and didn't normally happen to me before 1993. So it involved all sorts of stuff, like lights going on by themselves after I had turned them off, the same thing with fans, the same thing with the television, the same thing with, and I can name a number of things that were going on, all of which were very mystifying to me. Now, I keep using the analogy of the movie The Sting in the book, because this is what I believe it is. A good sting, the person who is the victim doesn't realize it's a sting. Or like in the movie The Sting, the person who played that role of the, you know, the rich Irish man who was thought he could make a killing, but yet he got killed by the sting because of Paul Newman and Robert Redford. Remember that movie?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this is what I finally came to the conclusion was happening to me. But instead of Paul Newman and Robert Redford creating the sting, I had a psychic and an abductee, both females. And between the two of them, who didn't know one another theoretically, but were giving me information that would confirm that what I was dealing with was a past lover, a past spirit lover. Now, this becomes, you could say this is amusing, and it's curious, and it's cute. But when I started to look at this, especially in hindsight, which was approximately 2006, I said to myself, oh my God, I was set up for a sting, only it was a spiritual sting. And what was the modus operandi? My curiosity in UFOs, the alien abduction phenomena, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay? And when I finally...
Can you hold that thought a minute, Brian?
Yeah.
Just a second. Now, Richard, is he going to join us soon? I've got a call here, and I don't know if it's from...
Yes, he said he would definitely call... he was supposed to call by 1 o'clock, but maybe he got detained.
Okay, let me put these on and see if that's Richard, okay? And
okay.
And get to the thought. Sorry to interrupt you, but they just came out, and it's been a little bit, and I don't want them to think that we're ignoring them. Here. Hello?
Hello.
Hello, who am I speaking to, please?
Mr. Richard Stout.
Yes, Richard. We're on the air, and we're talking. I interrupted Brian real quickly. He's finishing a thought, Richard, and then we'll get to introducing you. Brian, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Dana.
Okay.
Hi, Rich.
You're not going to believe what happened.
Okay. Well, listen, I tell you what, Rich, let me just finish my thought, and then I'm going to put the airwaves over to you, because my testimony will be great, because once I finish it, it'll lead beautifully into what you want to say, okay?
Yeah. Talk about spiritual warfare, my friend.
Yeah. Okay. I can believe it. Believe me. Dana, as a matter of fact, before the end of the program, Greg Messina, who couldn't be on the program, he had asked me to say a couple of things about how he's been affected since that we started writing the book and some of the things. So that would only take about a few minutes, but I'll do that at the end of the program after Richard speaks, okay?
That'll be fine.
Okay, but what I'm going to say now, Dana, it'll just take approximately 4 minutes. Just bear with me. I ask the audience to bear with me. I'm going to recite two short poems. The first one is published in 1996. It's called Anastasia, and it's quote-unquote in honor of this past spirit lover. Now, that's all I'm going to say. I'll read the poem, and then I'm going to recite how I now feel, a poem called Reliance, about what I've learned since doing this book, and it's 180 degrees in the other direction, okay? Here's Byron LeBeau, vintage 1996. Well, I didn't know any better. I know you're a beauty with your lockets of hair that bounce as they dart through the night. You hang out in corners with devil may care as you plan your next flicker of light. You turn on the fan, the TV, and such just to let me know you are near. You bow with your bowl and crash under cup. Such antics just hold you more dear. Methinks you are here to protect me, my dear, as you flicker in mirrors at night. You turn over statues and pull out the nightlight in whimsical, harmless delight. So what does one do with this mischievous beauty who consistently shows she is near? By changing my sign from my home to ours and wishing you'll always stay here. Boy, was I deluded in those days, Dana, and I'm a little ashamed and abashed to admit it, but the fact of the matter is, that's the truth. I went through these experiences. I wrote about it in my book called The Bud and the Blossom. Now, this is Byron LeBeau, vintage 2006 to 2007, after meeting Greg Messina, Richard Stout, and doing a little reflection on the Book of Enoch, demons, fallen angels, and whatever. How quick... This is called Reliance. And by the way, I have this poem up on a web page called Reliance, which has a lot of other scriptural background to it, okay? How quick are we to turn away and curry favors in the night, to bathe in such a false delight? We dream in bed with sights unseen and wallow in our goddess queen, and how she conjures us to see her beauties there for only me. But now I see with different eyes how all of this was only lies. No beauty was there by my side, just lies and lies and lies. If only I had God inside, I would have seen through their cruel eyes the conjuring of my sweet pea by reading Deuteronomy, relying God and he and me. So this, my lesson late in life, beware of flickers in the night, as well as phantoms of the day, reject them all without delay. Rely on God and his true word, and with these words thyself do gird. Leviticus has spoken true. Away from God is phantom stew. And then I just have a quick quote from Leviticus. Do not go to mediums or consult fortune tellers, for you will be defiled by them. I, the Lord, am your God.
Well, yeah,
and I can only repeat, it was through a psychic who I had helped, believe it or not, back in those days, and a abductee who I actually thought was an abductee, who between the two of them convinced me that I was dealing with this unseen beauty who I knew something was going on, but I couldn't see her. But they had all the answers, apparently, and were leading me down a gilded path, what I would now frame as a rabbit hole, and spiritual darkness.
Well, you know, the thing that you talk about is, you know, living in America, you know, we don't seem to have that sin factor there. Nothing's a sin, you know, where just like in the days of Babylon, you know, many gods, you know, anything's okay. You know, the Lord our God. You know, certainly, you know, this isn't the God that will get angry at us. You know, there's just so many avenues here that people in American churches are so ignorant of, and the folly is that in our own wisdom we think that it's going to be all right, when in fact the delusion and everything that's coming in is going to swallow up the entire world. You know, and you know, that on your behalf, there's nothing to be ashamed of. I mean, we all have come out of darkness. We've come out of Egypt, my friend. All of us have.
Right.
Nobody has arrived. But then, through Christ, you know, after he has opened the light, we are in the light and not of the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
Thank God for that.
Yes, I would double that and just say that I took this picture, which the abductee had drawn of this Anastasia, which the psychic said, oh, yes, that's what she looks like. Beautiful, beautiful young lady. And I threw it away. And I said to myself, even if it's just symbolic, I don't want this hanging around me anymore, you know. And all I can say to anybody out there who has any type of paranormal experiences, be careful, because in my opinion, based on everything I've seen, paranormal equals baits and lures for the dark side, because they have nothing better to do than from changing from being angels to anglers, hunting and fishing for their next prey.
Well, you know, as the scripture said, you know, the enemy, you know, walks about as a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. Now, whether or not, you know, you think of a lion, you know, walking around in the land, you know, trying to devour people, or you take him, you know, in the air, you know, they are there. You know, that entity, those entities are there. That power is there. The darkness is there.
Not to interrupt you, but that reminds me so much. When Richard is doing his keyword analysis in Scripture on some of the prophets, and his prophets that he was zeroing in on were Joel, the book of Revelation, Zechariah, and Isaiah, right? I'm reading the book of Jeremiah, and this is what Jeremiah says. Look, this is in chapter 16. Look, I will send many fishermen, says the Lord, to catch them. After that, I will send many hunters to hunt them out from every mountain and hill, from the clefts of the rock. For my eyes are upon all their ways. They are not hidden from me, nor does their guilt escape my view. I will at once repay them double for their crime and their sin of profaning my land with their detestable corpses of idols and filling my heritage with their abominations. So, again, here we go back to the full circle to the first commandment of God. I am the Lord thy God. And if you're going to have false gods before me to profane the very one who made you, in other words, slapping me in the face, then don't expect to be treated nicely. It's just common sense, you know?
Yeah.
And what do we have? What do we have today? Before Richard goes on, I'll just make this one last point. I was aghast at seeing on ABC News last Thursday night, the National Academy of Science, who said that the argument for evolution is overwhelming and compelling. Oh, really? Is it really overwhelming and compelling? I just, you know, I had a laugh to myself because I had just finished reading this book by Gary Bates, Alien Intrusion, which is a very interesting book, which totally dismantles the whole theory of evolution, or evolution, or whatever you want to call it, because they can't even get their act together from the very beginning. What caused the little point that allegedly contains all matter and things that evolved into this this beautiful universe we see? And when questioned by scientists about what came before that, they don't have a clue. And Gary Bates made this very, very clear. Matter of fact, he made it so clear that I said, I have to put this up on my website. So I made it a website, and I called it Stumbling Block to the Intelligent Creator, which they don't seem to want to acknowledge in any way, shape, or form. So let's put evolution in. Let's kick the Creator out. And that's the posture of the National Academy of Science when it comes to the public school system. Pretty sad, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, folks, in case you've just joined us, we're talking with Brian LeBeau and Richard Stout. Their book, The Cursed Net, discussing UFO, alien abduction phenomenon. And we are just about to talk with Richard Stout. Richard, are you there?
I'm here. Just by
Richard,
the grace of God.
Well, my friend, we're all here by the grace of God. The problem is a lot of people don't realize that. Even those who are wicked are here by the grace of God because he allows them to continue to do what they're doing.
Well, I'll tell you something. I don't have a cell phone. I don't have a landline. Satan knows this, right? And you wouldn't believe it. About 11:45, these trucks pull up by the corner of my street. They get out. They turn the electricity off. And that's it. They shut me down. So I can't call in the radio station at 1 o'clock like I'm supposed to.
Well, that's right, because you turn your they turn the electricity off, and now your cell phone doesn't work. Or your
I don't have a cell phone, but my phones did not work, operate.
Right. The cordless phone didn't work, right.
Mm-hmm. Yep, so now I say, well, Satan's playing his little game, so let me say a prayer. I said a prayer, and, well, God prevails. I still got a little time to talk here.
Well, why don't you, Richard, introduce yourself a little bit, and we'll go from there.
All right. Well, what can I say?
How did you get into all of this? And
I'd like to tell you my story of my encounters, my experiences. It's very important for the people to understand what's really going on here.
That's right.
It all started back, I think, when I was around 8 or 10 years old, and I was about to enter the front door of my house when I heard this strange noise coming from my right side. So as I turn around, I see this torpedo-like thing coming around the house heading right towards me. It's making this strange noise, and then all of a sudden, as I'm standing there looking at this thing, it hits me. Now, I don't know if you ever got punched hard enough to see stars, but I'm telling you, it's true. This thing hit me, I saw stars, fell down, and that's all I remember. After that, I just got up. I don't know what happened in the meantime, and I went into the house. Now I assume that was a form of an abduction.
Well, you know, it very well could have been. You know, Now, after that, did you have any dreams or any sense of being watched or anything like that?
Right after that, I don't recollect anything happening until I was 14 years old. When I was 14 years old, I was in the backyard playing with my friend.
Were you in the same location?
Same location, same house.
So they didn't have to track you down. That's another thing that a lot of them talk about, and that's tracking chips. Go ahead, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. No, I believe this is all personal.
Yeah.
So my friend and I were playing in the backyard, and all of a sudden we turn around, and there, standing right there about 6 feet away, was a reptilian type of creature about 8 feet tall. The thing looked like a miniature Godzilla, I'm telling you. And it scared the heck out of us. I mean, we looked at this thing. It had long, sharp teeth. It had green, scalish skin. It had yellowish eyes with the cat eye, the black part, going up and down. And we just looked at this thing, and we started running. We ran back to the house. We went in the house, and about 10 minutes later, my friend's brother came by to pick him up. We started screaming and yelling at him, saying, "What the heck are you doing? You put a costume on. You're in the backyard. You're scaring the heck out of us." He said, "That wasn't me." So I said, "Uh-oh." I didn't know what to, at that age, you don't know what to recognize.
So did that thing appear and just disappear right away? Did it do anything? Did it
It just stood there with, I don't know, if it was hungry and it wanted to eat you, it was that type of thing? Like it was just looking like you were a meal ready to eat?
Well, you know, Do you know of the testimony of James Casbolt?
No, sir, I don't.
James Casbolt is an MI6 agent, former one, and his grandfather was in naval intelligence, and his uncle was an MI5. Well, James Casbolt is a Christian today, but he tells of working with MI6 in underground bases, and he describes aliens and people, beings just like the one you described. And this, of course, leads into the fact of Hannah Billups. I don't know if you know her story. She actually witnessed kidnapped children and was claimed to have been in an underground base. Some people said she was a liar, but she died mysteriously after revealing everything that she had had seen.
Mm.
Now, the question, could these things really be operating in underground bases? Could they be operating with the government? You know, what do you think? Have you done any research along this? Have you seen
Well, if you don't mind, sir, what I'd like to really do at this particular time is just continue on with my experiences, because it is so imperative that the people understand what happens in the conclusion of this.
Yeah, I understand that, but I want to get back to this now, because what you've seen resembles exactly what these other people had seen.
Well, whatever happened, this thing just appeared.
Uh-huh.
All right, so in other words, it didn't come in a flying saucer or anything like that. It just appeared.
No, these things don't either.
All right, so what does that tell me? It tells me now that it was a spirit type of creature.
And do you think that these particular spirit type creatures could actually work with wicked humans on the earth?
Oh, most definitely. But it is my belief that they were in connection with some sort of supernatural fallen angel or evil spirit of this type, which has the ability to appear like that.
So why do you think that he appeared to you?
Well, like I say, it's all personal. I'm adopted, so I don't know if in some part of my parents' past that they were abducted themselves. But when I continue with my experiences, I'll explain something that's very important to the people out there, which they should know about these encounters. It is personal. I believe that. And they know exactly who you are, okay? They know if you have a relationship with Jesus or not, you know. They know all about you. Okay, actually, in Greek, the evil spirits are known as the knowing ones. So, so this thing, I believe, was a spirit type of being, all right? Either a fallen angel or a evil spirit disguised as a reptilian being. Because otherwise, if it was a true alien type of creature, how, if it is flesh and blood, could it have this ability to do this?
Well, as far as being, you know, carbon-based, you know, there's no evidence in the Hebrew for that at all. Okay, go ahead with your...
Okay.
So this thing appeared to you. What happened next in your experiences?
Well, right after that thing appeared... I wasn't normally that type of child that would actually take the Lord's name in vain or be, you know, that type of person that would curse a lot. I didn't do that at that point. But after this thing appeared, shortly after that, my personality started to change, and I started taking the Lord's name in vain and things like that. And my mother couldn't understand why, and neither did I. So that shows me that it was some sort of evil there.
Well, there's no doubt, you know, even though it appeared, you know, it could definitely be in the background, you know, not appearing, but can be influencing. There's no doubt about that.
Well, after that, there was, you know, some time in between my experiences at that point. And the next time I saw something was with my friends around 1970. We were hanging out.
Did you go
to
church or know the Lord at any time during this time?
No.
I mean, a real experience. We're not. Did you go to any kind of a church and was a nominal Christian or anything like that?
No.
Or You didn't have anything to do with any of that?
No, I believe that Jesus existed, yes, but I didn't go to church or anything like that, no.
And your folks didn't either?
Well, my folks did go to church.
Okay.
All right. When I was about 18, 19 years old, I was hanging out with a couple of friends of mine down by the water here in Mauritius Bay in Santa Mauritius, and there was this three-story hotel which was abandoned at the time, so we were actually, you know, going in there and checking it out and everything. My friend wanted to show me some secret passages or whatever, and when we went in there, we saw a whole, you know, bunch of mattresses laying around the lobby or whatever. And then when we went upstairs, we're checking the place out, we came down, all those mattresses that were laying around were all stacked up nice and neat. So we got the heck out of there real fast. We went down by the car, which was about 100 feet away, lit a couple of cigarettes. It was a starlit night with the moon showing brightly. Then all of a sudden, I look up on the roof of the hotel, and this thing stands up about 8 feet tall, puts its wings out about 8 or 9 feet in width, and starts flying. And my friends and I said, "What the hell is that?" I said, "I don't know, man." I said, we got the heck out of there.
Now, this was a moonlit night, you say?
Yes, it was a moonlit night, and this thing flew right up in the air, you know, and the backlight of the moon, you could actually see it resembled a man with wings.
So where was this? What state was this in?
This is Long Island, New York.
Long Island. Well, there's a lot of history up in for Native Americans up there and different things. So there could be any number of things, you know, the principality, you know, of darkness can definitely. Well, at any rate, that's interesting. So you definitely saw this entity.
Yeah, matter of fact, I told my friends, I kind of thought it might have been a condor. You know, I didn't know much about it, but I knew the bird was a big bird, you know, and logically thinking, what else could it have been? At that time, I didn't know. I was ignorant about all this stuff that I know now.
Did you ever see that entity again?
No.
Did you ever see the lizard reptilian creature again?
No, I didn't see that anymore. It turned into many other things. Later on, after that happened, then nothing happened that I can recollect until 1980. At that time, I was married, and I had a four-year-old daughter, and I had a baby son, and we're living here in Santa Mauritius, and my brother-in-law comes over to visit, right, and we go down by the water, and we're talking, right, and it's during the summertime, there's some clouds in the sky, and it's, I guess, around 7:30 at night, you know, it's still kind of light out. And all of a sudden, we're talking, there's nobody else down there, and all of a sudden, in the cloud, I said, "Look at that." I said, "There's three huge amber lights." And I said, "What the heck could that be?" You know? And the thing moved closer towards the outer part of the cloud, and I could actually see, like, if you took two saucer plates and put them together, they'd make a saucer shape. And that shape appeared as a shadow, but the three huge amber lights were in a row within that. And the thing was outside of the cloud. It was just sitting there. And I'm saying, "You know what that is? That's a UFO. Yeah, wow." And my brother-in-law got scared, but I got excited. And there's the attraction right there. Satan got you. There's the attraction. I go in my car. I grab the light switch, and I'm flicking my lights on to, you know, signal this thing. So as I'm doing that, we have a small airport nearby in Mastic, which people like to take their private planes up and fly around a lot. So it just so happened that a private plane was coming near us at that time. The UFO goes into the cloud where you can't see it anymore. The plane comes by and leaves. It comes out again. So we're watching this thing for a few minutes. Another plane comes by. It goes back into the cloud again.
So it shows intelligent life.
Yes. The plane leaves. It comes back out again. And it's sitting there. And my brother-in-law's contemplating on leaving. And I said, "No, I don't want to leave. I want to keep looking at this thing." And I don't exactly remember what I was trying to do at that point. But at that time, West Hampton Beach had, I believe, a military air base, and I believe it was a C-130 cargo plane or whatever that I saw coming towards this cloud from over the dunes on Fire Island, and it was coming from the east towards the west over the dunes low. And as it was coming in, we both looked at it, and we saw that it turned 90 degrees and started heading towards the cloud. So in other words, that's telling me now that the government saw this thing on radar.
And they know all about it.
You see? So as that C-130 started getting closer to that cloud, particular cloud, the UFO went back into the cloud again. The C-130 came out, circled the cloud several times, and then proceeded to leave. And once that plane left, the UFO came back out again, and then got so bright that if we didn't close our eyes and turn away, we probably would have been blind. And then it just disappeared.
So you have a long history of seeing these things. Now, today, you don't have these experiences anymore. You've dealt with those, and you've come...
Well, that's what I'm getting to.
Yeah.
That's what I'm getting to, and people have to know this. This is very important. But shortly after that happened, all right, other things started happening in my life. You know, I would see objects every now and then. You know, I went out, would go outside, I'd look up in the sky, see them. But a month later, after that happened, now this is very important. I, myself, when I saw this object, I was signaling this thing. Remember that. A month later, my daughter, she's 4 years old, right? I wake up in my bedroom at night, and I see all these colored light balls dancing around my bedroom. Colors like blue, red, green, and they're all dancing around my bedroom. You know, like a kaleidoscope type of thing. And I'm saying, what the heck is this? There must be a fire somewhere. It must be a fire truck, you know, or something. I look out the window, and next to the house, there was at that time there was a vacant lot with trees in it. Now there's a house there. But the whole woods were covered with these lights. So I run outside in my pajamas, and as soon as I get outside, the lights are gone. Everything's gone. I said, what the heck? I go into the house, and my daughter's wide awake. And I go to her, and she says, Daddy, she said, I'm bleeding. And I look at her, and she has a scoop mark and blood around her neck area. And I found out later there's one down in between her groin. And later she told me that she looked out the window and saw a craft, some kind of a silvery thing, hovering 20 feet above the house.
Yeah, and the scoop mark, that's typical for abductees.
Yes, she has two of them. Now she's 31 years old, but, you know, she doesn't really talk about it, and I don't even bother, you know, talking to her about it. But I feel now that I brought that in. See, at that time, I didn't have a relationship with Jesus. I brought that in. Okay, I signaled that thing. I wanted it to come into my life. All right? And because of that, I brought that into my family. And that's what happened to my daughter because I wanted to know about this thing. I myself was abducted. There was two things in my left knee. There's a scar there now, but that night I remember pulling something out of it that was embedded halfway in. And it looked like a little fish hook type of thing, plastic-like. And I pulled it out. I didn't know what it was. Later on, I flushed it down the toilet. But now I know that it was some sort of implant. But that's what happened. See? You're ignorant. You don't know. You get attracted to these things, and this is what happens. And after that, I started seeing numerous things in the sky. I kept hearing things, and then later on, I got involved with a UFO organization. We used to go down in Richards Bay a lot, you know, and do night watch. And we used to catch a lot of things on the video cameras down there. You know, we used to see flashes of blue light. There was one time that a cold, it was during the summertime and it was hot out, and all of a sudden the temperature dropped like 30 or 40 degrees. It got so cold that we were going to go home and get a coat. And we didn't know what that was, but now I have a good idea what it was. Almost every night we used to see something or hear something. I remember hearing noises in my attic, like there were people up in my attic walking around. Used to scare the heck out of me. Then my wife used to work till 2:30 at night. I remember lying in bed waiting for her to come home. I would hear the door open and close. I would hear footsteps. I would hear the keys go down on the table. I would call for my wife.
How old were you at this time?
How old was I?
Yeah, you were a grown man. And
yes, I was a grown man at this time.
Kids,
I would say late 30s, early 40s. And
and you still weren't in the, you know, didn't know the Lord at this point at all?
No. No, I mean, I knew him, but I didn't have that relationship. Okay, I didn't call out and accept him as my Savior. Let's put it that way. So I hear the footsteps. I hear the door close, open and close. I hear the keys go down on the table. I call for my wife's name. There's no answer. I get up. I walk in, and nobody's home. So these spirits are playing games. This is the type of stuff that would start occurring to me. And I would see pinpoints of light. I saw what looked like angels of light. I would see angels flying above me at night over my bed. I would see orbs throughout my house. I would go to work. I would see strange things in the sky, you know. There were times that there was one time I was driving the truck at work, and something came over me, and I was not in control of my functions. I couldn't control the truck, and I immediately started praying, and within 30 seconds, I had control of the truck again. In other words, something just took control of me. I couldn't move. So things started actually to get worse, and as time progressed, it got to be every day I started seeing things. Started hearing things in the house.
What brought you to the point where you had to find an answer?
Well, it wasn't just finding an answer. That wasn't really so much what was really bothering me at the time. It got to a point where, you know, it was something that in the beginning I enjoyed, that I liked a lot, and then all of a sudden it got to be threatening where, you know, when is this going to stop? I mean, it was going on every day. I remember waking up in my bed and seeing this figure about a foot tall standing on a pillow next to me and taking my fist and hitting this thing, and then my fist hitting the backboard. But if you ever were in a swimming pool and you ever moved your hand under the water, you could feel how that feels. That's what it felt like when I went through this thing with my fist. So, and then I saw a gray in my bedroom. I remember looking at this thing. You couldn't see your hand in front of your face, but yet I saw the head of this gray standing at the side of my bed. And the funny thing about it was that when I saw the reptilian, right, it was 3D. You know, it was real. It was a life image, you know what I'm saying? You could, it was real.
Yeah.
When I saw this gray standing at the side of my bed, it was a flat image, like it was a vision of something. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't a real entity.
An apparition?
Yes, okay. And the thing was just looking at me, and I was looking at it. And then all of a sudden, if you know how you can look at a person's expression, and all of a sudden they look nice and calm, and all of a sudden they give you that angry look, like they want to kill you. That's exactly what this thing did to me. It changed its facial expression to anger. And once it did that, it disappeared. There was a night that I looked outside my window. I saw this orange glowing thing floating across my fence. There was a night that I heard the cry like a banshee, screaming outside my window and the leaves rustling like crazy. Noises, I had frequencies, tones in my ears, headaches, nosebleeds. I was going through it so much, and every day these things would keep bothering me. And it got to the point that I just couldn't take it anymore. And I actually wanted to commit suicide. It got that bad. I mean every single day. I'm not just talking about having an encounter like, you know, frequently every so often. I'm talking about every day. It was almost like they wanted to drive me insane.
Well, they probably did.
You know?
Curiosity at first, and then the curiosity waned after they wouldn't leave you alone, and which, you know, put a little bit of, you know, honey on something in order to catch, you know, catch whatever it is you want to catch. And I think that there's a lot of this curiosity, you know, out there. And
probably because they knew, or Satan knew, that eventually I was going to help write this book, and he didn't want it to come out. That's a possibility too. You know, I'm sure the Bible has something to say about things like that, you know, that Satan looks to stop things from happening in the future. But I tell you, what happened was I got so upset to the point that I was just lying in my bed crying. And I didn't know what to do, so I cried out to the Father. And this is when it all changed, all right? I was at my last ends. I couldn't take it anymore. I wanted to commit suicide. These things were just, I couldn't live life anymore. There was no more life for me, all right? They just wouldn't let me alone. They wouldn't let me live, all right? So I cried out to the Father. I said, Father, what do I have to do to find your real son, Jesus Christ? And as soon as I said that, the instant I finished saying that, this heavy, heavy weight, like a bowling ball, was lifted right out of my chest. I felt it come right out, like two hands going in my chest and pulling this weight out of it. And as soon as that happened, not one thing over 15 years now has bothered me. It's all left. That right then and there, it all left, never came back. So there you go. And there's nobody in this world could tell me different.
Well, they might try.
I don't care. I know. I experienced it firsthand, and I'll take any lie detector test anybody wants to give me.
Well, you know, when we talk about this, there's a lot of fear that goes along with these apparitions, and a lot of people, you know, even today, you know, in the Christian realm, you know, that are in churches today, and that's why I kept asking you that do not know really how to handle some of these things. And then there's the whole part of the Christian assemblies that don't even believe these things exist or that they even happen. Now, the reason I mentioned earlier, James Caspold and Hannah Billups, both of these were people who claimed to be Christian. James Caspold, after he had those experiences, accepted the Lord again, he repented, and he's been taking it on to do his. Whether you believe him or not, you know, this guy claims to be a Christian. Hannah Billups was the same way, you know, and so we have another one, you know, actually two more, you and Brian both, Byron, and how we have that evidence that not only do these things exist, but that these are darkness, and I call it, of course, materializing of evil. I've interviewed L.A. Marzulli and many, many others, and we've covered this thing for, you know, a long time. And so there's no doubt about it. Now, if you were talking, you know, you're talking to someone, say, talk to two groups now. You have one group that don't believe, you know, that this, you know, maybe they're Christian, they don't believe they exist. You have another group that believes they exist, but these are people who don't believe in any way, shape, or form, except the fact that they are aliens and star visitors. You know, what is your message, you know, to these people and to what may be coming in the future?
Well, first of all, see, if you don't believe in Satan, well, first of all, you got to believe in God's word. All right? That's a problem right there. If you don't believe in what God is saying in the Bible, then already you lost. All right? Second of all, if you don't believe in Satan and the evil spirits and fallen angels, you've lost. You know, he's won. First, you have to believe these things exist. Okay? For Satan, he don't care about man. He don't care about anybody but himself. All right? Everything he's doing, the UFO phenomenon, is a facade. He's using it. They're disguising themselves as aliens to get whatever agenda they have to do, get it done. All right? And that's why they're doing this. So we put the blame on something that we believe could exist. You see? A person has to want Jesus Christ. He has to. I don't know why a person wouldn't even think about not calling to Jesus. You know what I'm saying? I mean, he's real. I mean, he's your God. He's your creator. You know, you got to want him with a true heart. You know, I don't know why some things happen, okay? All I know is that God is a person like we are too. He has emotions. He has feelings. He wants you to say thank you. He wants to know that you love him. You know what I'm saying? His heart is probably crying all the time to see what people do to people in this world. It's horrible. You know, he's probably crying all the time, and it hurts me because he's hurting. You know? And all I want to do is come to these people with a true heart and tell you, people, this is real. Satan exists. It's true. All these things are happening. Don't be caught up in this. You know? Seek out your Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. All right? Don't be afraid to do this, because once you do and you accept him, your whole life will change. I was afraid at one time of giving up certain things in my lifestyle, all right? But Christ changed all that. I don't care for those things anymore, you see? So my life has totally changed. It's where you stand in your relationship. How strong is your relationship with Christ? If it's weak, things can happen to you. If it's strong, he will protect you. Don't be lukewarm.
Well, you know, and we all know about the lukewarm church. You know, in 2 Thessalonians, and I said this earlier, you know, 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, Paul talks about the God sending a strong delusion that they should believe a lie.
And I believe this is part of it.
The reason it is that they receive not the love of the truth that they might be saved. And that's really what we're talking about here, the love of the truth, which is Jesus Christ, you know. And the minute, and of course God reads heart, the minute you cried out to the Father, you mentioned the name of the Son, you know, there's that love of the truth. And you know, you were saying, well, you know, Father, I believe in the truth. You know, Jesus Christ is alive.
Yes, see, my spirit within me wanted it.
Yeah.
My flesh didn't know what was going on. I couldn't take it anymore. It was ready to just to give up. But my spirit was strong enough that it was seeking out its creator. It wanted Jesus. It wanted to be saved.
What does your daughter say about all this?
Who?
Have you been able to talk to her about any of this?
Oh, my wife?
Your daughter?
Oh, my daughter, no. Last time I talked to her about this was several years ago. I really don't like to, you know, rehash it or anything like that. But I can tell you, once Christ saved me, he saved my family also, and nothing ever happened again. And it's a funny thing, too, because at that time, nothing ever happened to my wife or my son that I know of. It was just my daughter and myself.
Dana?
Yes.
I'd just like to add one thing what Richard just said right there. There is a very interesting thing in the 16th chapter of Acts that once you believe with your whole heart and your whole mind and your whole soul and strength and accept Jesus as your true Savior, you will be saved and the members of your household. So apparently there's a type of blanket protection depending upon, it's almost like a quid pro quo. You show me that you really love me, and I'll protect you and your family too. So if anyone out there who may not, you know, necessarily believe that is true, I found it right in the 16th chapter of the book of Acts. It's right there if you read it carefully. I think it's verse 31. And that to me could be a comforting thought. And that also may answer why, since after all, according to Richard's testimony, I was just listening to it. Well, you know, the daughter didn't really ask for anything, but she got it because of Richard. I mean, his own testimony. Now Richard's turning around and says, you know what? I made a mistake. I'm going to change my life. I'm turning around. And that must have been of such a fervent nature that the father and the son said, okay, we're going to protect you now fully with your whole family. It's possible. I'm not saying that is true, but it sounds to me like it could be a very interesting dynamic.
Well, when you're, you know, have a household and you're the father of the household, you're the, you know, you're that protector, so to speak. You are the one in charge, and that blessing of God flows through to your family. You know,
right.
Even the scripture says that the unbelieving wife is sanctified by the believing. You know. Both the spouses there in that verse, I believe it's Ephesians.
If I may interject for 1 second before we get off this type of subject, I want to bring up Psalm 91, verse 5 and 6, because I put it in the book because I believe that God is actually touching on the point of the UFO phenomenon in symbolism here, and I want to read these two verses. And people who understand the UFO phenomenon will understand what I'm reading. It goes, "You will not fear the terror of night, nor the arrow that flies by day, nor the pestilence that stalks in the darkness, nor the plague that destroys at midday." And I believe that he's actually symbolically mentioning about the UFO phenomenon right there. And he says he will protect you.
That's right.
And
no doubt
thing,
about it. But
yeah.
You know, this comes into the same thing that whether you're applying it to UFO or whatever you're applying it to, you know, and that is belief. And that is taking God at his word, standing upon the word. You know, that's just where we're at today. You know,
yeah.
We are in a society that does not believe. It believes in a lot of things, but it has problem believing with this. We're in a world that wants to cast this off. We have many, many things going on now, many, many distractions.
Yeah.
And the people of God are going to be required to stand and believe. And there's many people that, you know, cannot do that today.
Yeah.
And, you know, in our churches alone, we have trouble with even divine healing, for instance. We have trouble with a lot of things.
You
we
know,
have
that,
our own ministers that are
right.
living lives of pure adultery and sin and iniquity. You know, we are living in an age of godlessness, perversity. We've got prophets of God that are speaking peace, peace, when there is going to be no peace.
Right.
And, you know, the voice that should be heard loud and clear, even during this discussion, is we need to believe.
You know, before we go off the air, Dana, I just want to make one mention about our associate, Greg Messina. He wrote the foreword for the book. He's the one that brought us all together. And if it wasn't for Greg, probably this book would not have been written. Since he's come to the Lord, and since he has been deeply involved with the promotion of this book, he's been under spiritual attack. And he sent me a number of things that happened to him. But to show you just how interesting this whole thing is, I'll just read you one very short thing of something negative that happened to him, but he's also had two healings that he speaks to that had to do with in the name of Jesus. And I thought this is extraordinary. While he's being spiritually attacked, and probably for the same reasons that Richard has, in other words, the doctor doesn't seem to want anyone to be too aware of what they are doing, unmask their agenda. But when Greg was with his film crew, when he's involved with the film production or whatever, this is one thing that happened. This same film crew was subjected to the rotten egg or sulfur-type smell during the summer as it came from nowhere during shooting and filled the entire set, believed to be unclean spirit. And as I prayed in Jesus' name for it to leave, the smell vanished over the course of the day. As it was so strong, the smell lingered. And coincidentally, if you go to the 66th chapter of Enoch, verse 6, 666, you will find that the rotten smell, the sulfurous thing, is exactly where some of these beings are in. It's just a matter of looking at it. I invite anybody to read the book of Enoch, especially the translation by Richard Lawrence, and you will see that specifically. Why 66, verse 6? I don't know. It's kind of coincidental. But it is interesting because I found it in my own UFO research that the smell of sulfur is connected with many UFO type of encounters. You know?
Yeah, I smelled it too.
Yeah, and on the other hand, he's had two healings. He felt empowered to help a woman who, again, one of his coworkers who was suffering from TMJ, which is a form of lockjaw. She couldn't even put a pencil through her teeth. And he invited her to go to the back room with a witness, a female witness, and he performed a healing in the name of Jesus. He put his hands on her head, and the witness felt the room getting warm, and the woman felt her head getting warm, and before you know it, her TMJ had disappeared. And the next day she called Greg and said, even the residual pain in her throat is gone. And then 1 week later, he's in church, and a man who had heard about this other healing felt that for some reason he was being troubled by a familiar spirit, an unclean spirit. And he asked Greg if he would help him, and Greg took his hands, this is from what he told me now, okay, he took his hands, and again, in the name of Jesus, I command the spirit to leave, and he felt this resistance in the man's hands, and all like something is like fighting to stay in. When he wants it to leave, it left, and the man, he could see the man's face change, and he was at peace, and he thanked Greg for helping him. So this is a double-edged sword. I mean, from what it looks like to me, these stories sound so incredible to anyone, I'm sure, who is listening. But if you believe, if you are a true Christian and believe, as I said before, the God in you is stronger than the God of this world, and it's all it's a matter of is relying on the Father and the Son, and don't think that you can do it yourself. We have a couple of chapters in the book that Richard did keyword analysis for on Job chapters 40 and 41 about the behemoth and the Leviathan. If you read about these symbolic monsters, you know darn well they're not talking about any earth monsters, whether it's land, sea, or air. But it is talking about the beast. And the fact of the matter is, if you really read that carefully, it's invincible. At least to us, we can't defeat the beast by ourselves. We must rely on the Father and the Son. And that is, in fact, the theme and message of the Bible. How many people do that 100%?
Well, you know, when we talk about all of this right now, there's one thing for sure, and that is the comfortable lifestyle and everything we see in America is going to be gone. There are troubles and trials coming that are going to disrupt, you know, what we know as the comfortable Christianity and even those who aren't Christians. And it's going to come, like God says, I am shaking all the earth, and he's going to shake everybody and everything in it. Mm-hmm. And he will use anything, and he will even use these UFO phenomena to shake people up. And there's no doubt about it, whether it's UFOs or whether some of the other things that we face today, the answer is unequivocally Jesus Christ. And there's a call out to the church. And you know, and that is the church and the believers need to wake up and stand upon the Word of God. They need to seek. And this is one thing we say over and over and over again in all of our broadcasts, fast, pray, and seek the Lord as never before. That is one thing that the believer must do and get in there to know. And then no matter what may come at you, with the help of the Lord, you'll be all right. There's just no doubt about it. But we are living in that time, in that age, when these perilous times are upon us. We are in the final 5 minutes of these 2 hours, and we want to wrap her up here.
One thing I would like to interject, if I may, if people have in the future, if anyone out there ever sees an object in the sky that looks like a UFO and they see all the colored lights and it looks pretty, turn away from it. All right? It's the colored lights and the way they're set up that puts you in a trance. It attracts you. Don't let Satan draw you in. Turn away. Call to Jesus and leave.
If people have heard our L.A. Marzulli interviews that we've done, he will tell you not even to look at them either. You know,
yeah, that's right.
And so there's no doubt about it when we talk about the enemy that tries to persuade people through various means. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say we really didn't have a chance to talk too much about the book today, but if anybody is interested in just seeing what it's all about, we have a website set up for that. It's called thecursednet.com, very simple. Or you can go to my own website, which is inspectorblebeau.pbwiki.com. And, of course, Greg Messina set up his website, revelation7.com, and the 7 is a Roman numeral, so it's revelationbii.com. Any one of those websites, you'll get all of the information you need to link to any of the things that Richard or I have talked about tonight from beginning of hour one. I've had copious information. We have this book is offered, of course, but it's also free on the Internet for those that don't mind reading things on the Internet. We're trying to give the information out in a way so it's there for everybody, whether you have the money or not, that you can actually read and experience Richard's testimonials, what I had to say, the links to many, many other people, by the way, Dana. This is what I found interesting when I was doing my own research. I found not only people like Marzulli, but I found J. Timothy Unruh, who supported our contention about Genesis 6:4, that the sons of God were, in fact, fallen angels, that the book of Enoch, chapter 15, actually discusses where these unclean spirits came from. And what they did was they came from the giants. When the giants died, their spirits were condemned to be earthbound and to rove the earth only. They were not allowed to rove anywhere else. And these unclean spirits are what I believe are the familiar spirits that psychics and mediums use today, to this very day, to pretend that they are talking to dead people when they are not. And that is one of the big points that we made in the 9th chapter of our book, Show and Tell. And I think people should be aware of this. If they think this is entertainment, they are sadly mistaken. It's just another one of those baits and lures of Satan. Invite me in, and we're going to have a blast destroying your body and destroying your soul.
Yeah, the book is not an easy read. You have to take your time and read it slowly to understand it, and especially those people who are involved with abductions or UFO phenomenon or know anything about it will understand it a little better.
Well, I want to thank you both. This 2 hours has gone by fast, and we've discussed a lot of stuff today. And we've been speaking with Brian LeBeau and Richard Stout. Their book, The Cursed Net, speaking of the UFO and alien abduction phenomenon. And you can find that book. Matter of fact, The Cursed Net is a fairly big book. That's I've got it right here. It's a little under 300 pages.
Sure, and you can go to Amazon.com, and They actually linked our book with a book that Thomas Horn just came out with that deals with a similar subject about the return of the Nephilim in 2012, no less.
Oh, they changed that, Brian.
Did they really?
Yeah, they took his book off and put another one in now.
All right, well, that's something that we could do a whole program on. This whole idea of 2012, this is Satan's agenda, apparently. And the Mayan calendar have to do with this zeroing in on 2012, but it's not God's timeline, from what I understand.
Well, we're just about to the end. We got a couple of seconds here. Do you got any last words, either one of you?
Well, I would simply say, and vouch for what Richard said, reliance on the Father and the Son is the most important thing you can learn from reading the Bible. Everything else is simply commentary. And obviously, to love the Lord thy God with a whole heart, mind, soul, and spirit, and your neighbor as yourself, is a way you show God that you rely on him and not just say it. You got to do it. So you walk the walk and talk the talk, but you got to walk the walk first.
Well, that's all for today. You've been listening to Warren Radio. This is a special segment of Hot Prophecy News, Warren Radio Into the Night. And you can get this particular one on our websites, our archives. We will also be airing this over American Voice Radio Network. That's on Friday nights at 9 p.m. So for everybody at the WIBR and for Brian and the book, The Cursed Net, and for Richard, we want to remind you to seek the Lord as never before. Look to him and him alone. This is The Watchman. We'll see you again next time. God bless.
Have a good day, Dana. Take
yes,
care.
You too.
Okay. Bye now.
Goodbye.
Take care, sir. Thank you very much for everything.
We'll see you. Have a good one. Thanks.
You too. God bless.
God bless.